This is episode 93 with Vin Lee.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome, everybody. Today I have with me Vin Lee, and he is many, many things. He's a TCK, he's an entrepreneur, he's a businessman, he's an author, and I'm excited to talk to him about his story, his journey, and just kind of what he's doing right now. So welcome to the show, Vin.
Hi, Tayo. I'm very glad to be here on your podcast.
Now, we were talking before because you said, you know, that we both shared the love of the French language, but can you tell me more about your background and how you got to start speaking French?
You want me to do it in French? I know you would understand.
I'm professeur français, mais everybody else listens in English, so.
Okay. So. Bonjour. So, I think I'd have to start with my parents. So, okay. Both of them lived in Vietnam, but My mother is Chinese. And they actually met in France, where I was born. And I'm actually a third culture kid, living in a French environment.
Oh, wow.
And for me, I just thought that it wasn't as natural for me to grow up there as for the natives. And I actually had to, it was a bit difficult at the beginning, but now I realize that it's actually a difference that makes a difference.
Right. So that was good. So your parents, what was their job? Like, how did you end up in France? Because if it's Vietnam and then Chinese mom, and then, yeah. Is it your dad's job or mom's job?
Actually, they went in France to study. They had good grades in Vietnam, so that was one of the prerequisites to actually go to France. And they met over there during their studies. And as things went on, my father became a physics teacher. So he taught me a lot of math and physics, and that's why I became a good student. And he also went to teach a bit in Morocco. So he traveled a bit. I went there a bit as well, and I got accustomed to the culture over there. But most of my upbringing was in France, and my mother is a nurse, and we moved to the city of Clermont-Ferrand.
Clermont-Ferrand. Okay.
Yes, which is very well known for volcanoes and the cheese. Very good food over there.
Huh. Yeah. Now, growing up as a kid, obviously, people saw you and they didn't think you looked French. So when did you become cognizant of the fact that you were a little bit different?
Well, I remember there was the story of a child who was a white kid who was brought up in Africa. And the way he would draw the families, he would draw everyone as white, and he was just make his face as black.
Yes.
Because he would see himself as a black person. And for me, I was like everyone else, because I was the only Asian kid around, and we were the only Asian family around, so I really considered myself as being French. But the thing is that people don't really interact with you the same way. I know that most of the kids, some of them would make fun of me, but they're kids, so they say whatever comes to their mind. But they would never really fight with me because they thought I would do kung fu.
Jackie Chan. Yeah, so they thought it was that type of stereotype. So that's crazy. And then you said sometimes it was a little bit difficult. So I was just curious when, like for me, when I moved a lot growing up, I remember in middle school, this is when I started learning French in Burkina Faso. I think it was 10 or 11, and sometimes I went to international school. It was interesting because I would go back home, and the students, you know, white, European, you know, all sorts of countries, Asia, everywhere. And I just sort of felt alone because I felt like everybody sort of belonged in, and I was just, you know, just trying to find my place. But it took a while, and then I eventually found a way to connect to people. I guess mine was always through sports and, you know, geography and pop culture. But I had to find a way to connect to people. What was your connector?
It's true that there was a bit of difference. I remember my parents, there was always how we behave at home and how we should behave outside.
True.
Because the values were different. I think that it just, you know, being with everyone, like school was a very good way to mingle with all the people. I think playing football was a very good way, you know. It's just playing with the kids. When you play, everyone's the same, and you just feel you belong.
Right.
But because I could speak the language, so there was no problem. Right. I was a bit introvert when I was growing up, but more and more I learned to open myself.
All right, that's such a great point. I love that you said you said two things there. Language helped you connect, and then it was obviously you played soccer. Soccer is, I'm playing soccer now. I always say football, but I don't know why I said soccer because I'm in America. Yeah, it's one of those universal things. But okay, no. So if I now fast forward to your life, to your college, you decided to work in an airplane company, right?
Yes.
Right.
It all started also because I have a passion for aircraft, planes, and aeronautics. Mm-hmm. It was when I was a kid and I traveled to Vietnam. I had the luck to really see a cockpit. And if you think about it, an aircraft is something amazing. Mm-hmm. It flies, you know.
Right, and that's true. Defies gravity.
It defies gravity.
Yes.
It also makes the world such a small place. Mm-hmm. And we have so many third culture kids that wouldn't be there if they weren't aircraft.
Oh, that's so true. That is so true.
I really wanted to work in the airplane industry. So I was a good student, you know, Vietnamese education. My father is a physics teacher, so no questions. I became a good student. I went into an aeronautical school. I started doing some internship as being a flight attendant. Mm-hmm. So learning really how the aircraft works, traveling a lot in the US, in Africa as well, seeing a lot of different cultures. Mm-hmm. And then I got the opportunity to work in the biggest aircraft manufacturer in the world. It's bigger than Boeing, actually. It's Airbus.
Airbus, yeah.
Yes, Airbus. And I was very lucky to go there. I went through an intensive training. You know, before they even let you to speak to one customer, you've got to go through 1 year of training.
Wait, 1 year?
Yes, 1 year. During 1 year, you're completely useless. You just sit on a chair and you work on your presentation skills, aircraft engineering, aircraft mechanics, and all that. And after they think that you're worthy enough to see the customer, then you start traveling.
Oh my goodness, that's a lot of work. So you discovered that you have this passion for aircrafts, and then you stuck with it. You know, you fell in love with it, and then you sort of got, you know, how long are you still working there, or did you sort of move away from there?
I actually left the company like 1 year ago. I'm on a sabbatical leave. Mm-hmm. But for 8 years, I've really gone into the aeronautics. I was in touch with all the experts within the company, asking them, oh, what's that technology that you have that we can put inside the aircraft, and how can we sell that to the customer? And you get to travel all the time. I remember there was 1 week I was in three continents. I've done three continents in a week.
Three continents a week, wow.
Yes, I would wake up, I wouldn't know what time it is, where I was, or even who I was, you know. And that's a bit difficult because you don't really travel the way you want. You see a lot of countries and you feel like you're in a buffet, you taste a bit of everything, but really you don't really get a taste of it.
Gotcha. So I mean, so yeah, it's one of those things that's it can be fun sometimes, but then when you keep going back and forth, you don't even get to enjoy or savor the environment. So it's a little difficult. It's a little difficult. So what about you took the sabbatical, and I know that you do a lot of things. So one of the things is you've written a book, right? I think you wrote an Amazon bestseller.
Yes.
Or maybe you wrote several books. I think, is it two or one of how many books?
I wrote two books.
Okay.
It's about a topic that I love.
Okay.
Because I think that everything in life is linked to persuasion. Mm-hmm. If you want to start your company, if you want to make a project, you have to convince other people to support you, to give you money, to give you their expertise, their time, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you have to persuade them. It started with actually reading a lot of books. I recommend my books.
Yes.
or Cialdini's Influence, where he really breaks down the whole framework of influence into six factors that can be applied anywhere. So I really fell in love with that. I made a blog, which is actually at my name. So vinh.ly. I'm actually quite lucky because the top level name is actually my last name. So
that works out. So what's the title of the book? And then, you know, what are some of the things? Because I would definitely put it in the show notes. I want people to know what to expect in the book and why, you know, you're very passionate about that. Because it's going to lead to the next question I'm going to ask.
So the title of the book is Billion Dollar Influence, a persuasion skills masterclass from someone who sells private jets for a living.
That's very, very specific. I like it.
Yes, we thought a lot with my editor about the title, and we think that's the one that describes the best what is in the book. So what is in the book is basically I wanted to make learning persuasion simple. At the beginning, I started by making very complicated models, but I wanted to make something that people could consume and remember. So at the end, I made comics. Oh. And if you make comics, people read them very easily, and it forces me to remain simple, and people remember them. So I made a whole framework in persuasion, and it explains all that using comics.
Wow, so you use comics to get a message out, and it's book slash comic book, or it's so when you look at your book, they see the images, and you got the characters saying the messages, and it's easier to absorb.
Actually, when they read the book, they have the first they get the comic. The comic has six panels. The first three panels give you the normal situation. I call it normally. So you see two people talking, and they try something, and it doesn't work. And then you have the second situation. It's not normally, it's Vindy.
Vindy.
And in that situation, you see the persuasion technique at work. For example, if we take the double bind, which is a persuasion technique, you say, do you want to pay cash or Visa? If you see a girl, you say, do you want to go to my place or yours?
That's true, right, yeah.
Yeah. You frame the question as so that the two choices are actually the choices that are good for you. So the people think that they have a choice. Actually, you're making it for them already.
Right. No, this is good. I'm looking at the Amazon review right now, and it's amazing. Because someone saying, this is a great book with excellent examples, a guide to practice new techniques. Many books gives you tons of theory, but... and science, and you don't care about that. But this actor actually talks about ways to improve your skills. So I'll put the book out there. It's a Billion Dollar Influence Persuasion Skills Masterclass from someone who sells private jets for a living. All right.
Yes.
I'll put that out there. Now, one of the other fun things you do is also besides being an author and a businessman that sells private jets for a living, you've been an entrepreneur. You got invited to the French version of The Apprentice, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you talk about that experience? I know you've got some good and bad things about it, but I'm curious about what that's like, what the process is like, and how you got selected, why you wanted to do it, all that.
absolutely. So I wish I could say I'm a TV star, but nobody has recognized me in the street yet.
It's okay. No one knows who I am, so it's all. I share your pain.
I know who you are, Tayo.
Ah.
So what happened is that I was sitting in front of the TV and I saw the ad saying, "Oh, do you like sales or negotiation? We're going to make a new TV show."
Right.
And in my heart, I knew that was The Apprentice because I've been watching it for years in the US, in the UK, and I said, what a great opportunity. I can really go there and show my persuasion skills. You know?
Right.
A lot of people say they can do things, and I want to show it on TV. And what happened then is that I sent a video resume, and they made me go in front of the camera, and I had the magic tricks because some people, if you read my book, you will know that I'm a magician,
right,
and that I use magic to sell aircraft. I have a whole storytelling about the aircraft being lighter, going on top of the deck. I make coins disappear and reappear when they choose my aircraft. I take the aircraft from a PowerPoint screen and put it in real life.
Right.
And when they've seen that I've got I said I was involved in private jets, I'm Asian, I think it does count. They have to match certain type of demographics.
Right.
And they saw that I was extremely, extremely motivated. They say, okay, you're going on the show. So I was very happy. I said there would be so many pictures of me. Everyone would know me. So many opportunities that the doors would burst open when I arrived.
Yeah.
So I started and I tried to explain it to my friends, and my friends did not really understand what the show was because the show does not exist in France yet. Mm-hmm. They said it's very disgusting to have unemployed people fighting on TV to get a job. You know, that was the mentality.
Reality TV is not did not make its way over there to France. It's more like an American thing, huh?
Yeah, and they really thought that I would be like making a fool of myself. Why do you do that? You already have a great job.
Yeah.
Why do you not need to go on reality TV? And for me, I said, okay, I'm not going to listen to anyone and I'm going to do it. And I started out and it wasn't actually what I expected. It was very harsh, you know, every episode is actually one day. So if you have like 16 episodes, then you have 6 days of filming, one day where you can rest, and then 6 days as well. So you wake up at 5 a.m. and you go to sleep at 1 a.m.
Hmm.
Very, very tiring. And oh my God, some of the guys were unbearable.
They were unbearable. Well, why were they unbearable? Did you get paired up with like some diva or something?
Oh yeah, they would not shut up. They would keep talking and talking. And I was trying to say something, and whatever I said, I was wrong or not listened to. So you really had to scale to ramp up your leadership skills, and that was in that case I really understood what it meant to really put yourself out there.
Mm.
I was more in other environment where people would listen to you, where everyone would speak turn by turn. Here it was like fighting for survival, you know.
Yeah. Because, you know, it is The Apprentice. So how many weeks did you last on the show?
I lasted something like six shows. And when I left, it was not because I was incompetent. I need to say that. It's just the team leader said, I'm a competitor. And instead of taking the two weak team members, I will take the two best members with me to the boardroom.
Oh, gosh.
And I said, why?
Oh,
why?
Yeah.
Why would you take someone? If you need to fire people, why would you need to take the two best team members?
That's,
you know,
true, yeah. Sometimes they do that, though. Sometimes, because I'm a big fan of The Apprentice here, and I always say, no, don't do that. And sometimes it's like part of the strategy. So, it sounds like you were part of that.
Yeah, it was part of the strategy. And the guys, they were like, big loud mouth, and they were very good for the audience and all that. So in the end, I was the one to go. I thanked the boss, and I said, "I hope we can work. I hope we can work together." But the way you live is very important in this case. But the thing that I haven't said yet was that the show actually didn't work in France. It only aired for 2 nights. They expected something like 3 million people to watch it, which would be the average, and the first night only 1 million people.
Wow!
And even less the second night.
So it got canceled. So it got canceled.
So we got canceled after the second night. There can be many reasons for that. Some people say there is no French word for entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I think Bush said that. entrepreneur being a French word.
Right, exactly. I was just going to say, it's a French word. So it got canceled. How did that make you feel? Because you had invested so much of your time into the show, and then you didn't even get to your episode.
They didn't see me fired on national TV. National TV,
right?
And I think they couldn't say the word fired because fired was like too strong. Mm-hmm. So they said things like you're not ready yet, you know. They were like very a lot softer. How did I feel? I feel a bit frustrated. I wish the people understood more of what we were trying to do with the apprentice. But the thing is that mostly they said that when they go back from work, they don't want to see more work at home. They just want to relax and see things that are more entertaining than watching The Apprentice.
Gotcha. Fair enough. And that's one of the things about culture, because sometimes something works in a different culture than it does in French. So can you tell me more about the French culture, for example? I want you to... You know, as someone who of Vietnamese origin, you know, and some Chinese, and someone who's just like well traveled, like you travel all over the place. Mm-hmm. What is unique about the French culture that people don't understand, that people don't normally get, especially as someone that looks at it with a unique lens?
It took me a lot of time to really understand what was the difference between the French culture and the other cultures. But just and I understood it more and more when I had a French girlfriend, because I really got to live in the family and see how they behave and all that. I would say that French are very particular when it comes to food and quality. There is a proper etiquette when you eat, when you have wine and all that. When you have food, you talk about food. It's a very important moment in the day. So whenever I am with other French people, we spend at least 1.5 hours eating and discussing, rebuilding the world and all that. And something that was really deep in the roots and that I recently realized is the difference between a guilt culture and a shame culture. So I think that in the Western world, it's more something that's called a guilt culture, and in the Eastern world, it's more a shame culture. It means that whenever you do something wrong in the Western culture, you have to confess. You've done something wrong. You have to feel guilty about it, you know. And in the East, it's more about how people will perceive you. You know, for example, my parents, when I did something wrong, they would never tell me it's bad. They would tell me the consequence of what would happen if I did it.
Oh wow! Yeah.
In France, for example, in the Western culture, they say, "Don't steal. It's bad." My parents told me, "Don't steal. If you get caught, you go to prison," which is very different, actually.
Very, very, very different. It puts like a fear in you, you embarrass the family, right?
There's a question of face. It's true that also I don't often say no. I do have the Asian, yes, I understand what you say, and it's very important for me to keep I think about the collective.
Right, right. No, that's so interesting because I'm Nigerian, and in the African culture, a lot of times it is similar to the fact that there's shame culture. So when I moved to the United States to study, you know, my dad and mom would say, don't get involved in bad gangs. If you do that, this is what's going to happen, and everybody's going to say, you know, it was a mistake, blah, 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 blah. Make sure you don't join, you know. So it's always that you always had, this is what would happen if you do this type of thing. So it's the shame culture, like you're saying. And that's very interesting. So having to navigate between guilt and shame culture, what did you end up doing? Did you always go out of your house like, okay, saying, I can't embarrass the family, and then did you just...
In a guilt culture environment, I'm thinking about what people consider that should bring them guilt, and how I should avoid putting them in that situation or putting myself in a situation.
Gotcha.
You know, it was very hard because one of my friends, they did something that had absolutely no consequence on anyone, and they kept feeling guilty about it.
Right.
But that has no consequence. I mean, nobody knows about it. Nobody's going to be affected, and still you feel guilty about it. That was something for me. I say, okay, it's done. Okay, move on.
that's cool. One thing I want to talk again about your growing up is, besides doing magic, which is something we haven't talked about. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but there's obviously an aspect of relationships and having that job. How did you? I don't know if you are in one, but how have you found relationships with your family, friends, and maybe significant other as someone who's constantly navigating between cultures? What are some pieces of advice that you could give to people out there who constantly undergo and, like, looking for that, some form of secure friendship or anything like that?
Yeah, for me, it was everything became easy when I... actually, things were quite easy because people, when they see me as being Asian, they think that I don't know how to behave.
Or
they would excuse a lot of things because they say he comes from a different culture, so he might not know. So every time I was doing something, I would just that might be a very Asian thing, but I would apologize first. Everyone is sitting in front of their dish, and you don't know when to start. And you say, okay, I don't know what's the process here, a protocol here, but is it okay if we start? So every time I have a question, I just say it out loud. And I just say, okay, I don't really know how it works. Just when you want to meet someone, you know, in France, sometimes you kiss, sometimes you shake hands, sometimes you hug. Sometimes there's a different number of kisses. Sometimes you start with the right cheek, sometimes with the left cheek, depending on where you are. I just say, okay, how does it work over here?
Mm-hmm. Wow, okay. Yeah, did that make it easy for you to connect? Because people are like, oh, he doesn't, you know, he's a little... sorry, excuse me, I had to sneeze.
Don't worry.
So it's like, oh, well, you know, he doesn't know, so let's just welcome him. So that made you more, I guess, easier to connect to, or?
I think that I wasn't ashamed of asking, and I was genuinely interested in how things work, you know. Mm-hmm. I got interested in their culture, and I say, oh, is that how it works? Or what's this cheese?
Curiosity.
Can you tell me more about it?
Yeah, so you tapped into your curiosity, you asked questions, and that helped. And that's something that I completely agree with. I always tell... When people always ask me, what is it about, you know, traveling? I always say, you know, I'm someone that smiles, I have a lot of energy, but I'm not afraid to ask questions because I really don't know a lot of things. So when you ask questions, you put yourself in a position where you're learning, and you also obviously meeting people that will inevitably take you in or talk to you about some sort of things and tell you what not to do. And that helps you connect better.
Yes.
At least in my experience. Okay, right. So, as we get ready to wrap up, I want you to talk about two things. So, one is what's upcoming for you. What things do you have that are coming for you? And then the second is how you use your difference to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So what's coming for me is I told you I'm working in persuasion, but persuasion is so big a field. There's dating and relationship,
right.
There's getting a job, negotiating pay raise, or talking with investors. I even got someone who contacted me asking me if I could help him get out of jail, you know?
Oh, wow.
And and I said, I can try.
But that's not what I'm doing.
Absolutely. And I met someone, his name is Fabrice. He's a great guy. He's an expert in conversion rate optimization, and I'm partnering with him to make a service that helps people improve their websites and improve their conversion rates. Okay. And the amazing thing is that we really went into the trenches, and for someone who was used to selling private jets, and we started on Fiverr, you know?
Right. I know Fiverr, I've used Fiverr a lot, yeah.
It's great, and actually that was the best way to actually see how the market reacts to the offer. So we started with $5 gigs, and now we have like more than 100 customers, and we prototyped a productized service to help people improve their conversion rates. We've made the launcher of our service outside Fiverr. So you can find it on improveyourconversionrate.com.
Improveyourconversionrate.com, okay.
Yeah, I think that it's good for the listeners to download our free ebook at improveyourconversionrate.com/bonus,
mm-hmm.
where they have some free tools that they can immediately put on their website to improve their conversion rates. And for me, that was important, you know, to develop my own service and to provide something that would be useful to people. Because it's good to work for a corporate job. You meet a lot of people who have lifestyles of billionaires, but you don't have that lifestyle. You don't have that freedom. And I really wanted to get that freedom, live as a nomad, you know. I've been in Barcelona. Next month, I'm going to Thailand. I travel with my own terms. And I think that this business is really going to help me doing that.
Okay. So you're creating a lifestyle that's going to allow you to have that location independent business.
Absolutely.
You really, really want to do that. So the website again is what?
improveyourconversionrate.com.
Uh-huh.
And I think they should download the free ebook, which is at improveyourconversionrate.com/bonus.
Okay. We'll make sure we put that there. And all right. I lied. I said I had two questions. But I have one more question before I ask you how you use a difference to make a difference. And that has to do with persuasion skills. I'm very intrigued. What mm-hmm. are three tips you can give the listeners out there to help mm-hmm. them become better persuaders?
I think there are three. I think the use of the double bind is a very good tip that they can use. Try to frame the choices with only two options so that the two of them benefit you, but don't put it like up front after mm-hmm. a conversation. Just drop it, and then people will take any of those two choices, and you've got the money. It works.
So frame the question as two choices.
Yes, the thing would be to frame the question as two choices. The second persuasion tip would be, I know it's counterintuitive, is to meditate.
Mm.
I think that the practice of meditation will make you more in tune with yourself and with the others. Because we always live in our frames. If we are not in tune with your emotions and you're not in tune with the other people, then you cannot persuade efficiently.
Gotcha.
And the third one is to do some improv comedy.
Improv?
Yes.
Why do you say so?
Because improv comedy is really helps you to react, be more responsive. You can turn a no into a yes, and you learn to listen. Because improv comedy is all about listening to the other person's proposition,
yes.
Understanding where they want to go. And if you're flexible enough, you can actually use their motivation to actually have something that would be beneficial to you.
Huh. Well, I mean, I'm just framing the question: improv comedy, and the second one was
meditation.
All right, boom, perfect. Right, those are the three actionable steps. I'm going to start. I have done some improv, and it's interesting. Like, I tried to do the yes and thing, and it definitely helped with because I had an improv guy as one of the guests, and he had me do one of the exercises. And you're right about how it helps you listen, and you're just like, okay. Trying to get them to say yes. All right, cool. All right, but it definitely makes you see things in a different way. So I didn't thought about it that way, but that's a good point. It's a way to persuade people. So, sir, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I use every day my difference to make a difference. I think that using the being a third culture kid has helped me embrace the whole world, see people as a it helped me seeing people with more perspective. Mm-hmm. I think I'm more open to discussing with them because I won't judge them for their difference, because I am different. I know everyone's different.
Right.
But right at the bottom, we're all the same, you know? We have the same color of blood. And I think that it helps me connect, and I like connecting people together. So that's how I use my difference to make a difference by connecting people.
Well, I love it. And thank you so much for coming on the show. I'll make sure that I put the links to your book, the links mm-hmm. to the business you have, and obviously your other ways to find you, and make sure we try to take advantage of your resource. I know you have a free conversion resource for us, so I'll check that out as well.
Thank you, Tayo.
All right.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uidmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.